Oh man, it's these weeks have flown by, and there's so many developments. I don't know where to start even. Okay, what do you think of the Gemini 3 Pro thing? Have you managed to get on it?
I'm using anti-gravity and I get some Gemini 3 Pro for free. So obviously my limits are pretty bad. And it has been, I mean, I started, I'm like a day, I'm shifted in like 12 hours compared to when they announced it, right? But that also means that I'm online when most Americans that try it out are offline. So I have to fight with other Southeast Asian based people, which not everyone is following the latest Gemini 3 release. So the
Right.
first day, I had a decent amount of work done by Gemini 3. It was pretty good. The experience in anti-gravity was also pretty nice. It gives you a couple of new like things, reviewing files. I haven't used Cursor, so I wasn't too familiar with like a proper IDE integration. I've given up on Visual Studio Code Copilot for a while already. I'm purely in CLI land. So using an IDE, and you know, it's been a long time before the LLM was like rewriting the whole file, and you had to watch it rewrite, and you go like, "No, don't change that!" Ah, and now it just instantly pops up with like, "This has changed. This has changed. You can review this file." So it's
All right.
pretty cool. Yeah.
Because I don't know if you saw that link I sent you yesterday to some AI summit with Steve Yeager, and
It was live, right? I
it
didn't
was
watch it
live.
live. Yeah,
Yeah,
because I like to fast forward and so on. So
well, I just I, someone shared the link and I just tapped on it, and like Steve Yeager was giving his spiel live, and it was pretty good.
nice.
It was a
It
pretty
is a
good
good.
talk.
It's.
Yeah.
I definitely want to see that. Now you told me that he's talking about it.
Yeah,
I've
he's talking
seen a
about
lot of
farming,
improvements on the
but
tool.
like one of his like he says like, oh, I needed to give a hot take, and here's my hot take: you're a bad engineer if you use an IDE by the end of the year. I thought,
By the end of the year. Oh, that's a hot
yeah,
take.
that is a hot
Interesting, yeah.
take. Like, but like an
Is he
IDE.
sponsored by Warp now?
Well, the thing is, the AI summit was like sponsored by I think Google, and Google was like anti-gravity this, anti-gravity that. So I thought it was a little bit rude of him to basically drop a bombshell, don't use an IDE. But like, I think it perhaps
Interesting.
what he's trying to say is that you don't need to edit code. You don't need to edit code.
Yeah,
Is
because
he,
you
is that what
definitely
he's
want to
saying?
see those diffs, and to be honest, even Cloud Code is integrated within Visual Studio Code or whatever IDE you run it. Every other IDE is a VS Code fork anyway.
Yeah,
So
everything's
it's
just
really
so
nicely
far.
integrated. Like it opens up the diff for you. You can clearly see it. Like, those things still need a proper. And what anti-gravity does really well is, and I'm still learning, but it gives you like a proposal, and I was like, great, like I don't see where I need to click, but then there was a small button at the top which is like review, and then you can like highlight, which they show I've seen on the product demo, and you can highlight like here it made an assumption. I say, well, this is a wrong assumption, and then I
Ah, that's
feedback the it's
interesting.
like a PR review. You can just highlight different sections
Yeah,
and put a comment on that.
it's like a different take on that whole plan mode in Claude, because I really like plan mode in the sense that it's
Yeah.
like prompting you this, that, but like making
Now this
quick
new, right? Now
clarifications.
when it's planning, it goes like I have a couple of clarifying questions, and it asks those questions to you, which is something that Speckit also did, and now they kind of build it into Cloud Code. Like it goes off into a planning agent, which is running Sonnet 4.5, goes through your code with the requirements, and comes back with like a plan and some clarifications, and it asks you like I have five clarifying questions, and then you answer them and you submit it back, and then it comes up with a plan, which is a very nice experience.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more CLI gang because I feel like, you know, moving between the keyboard, moving like A, B, C, like I can be a little bit faster because the IDEs can be a bit clumsy. But it feels like we're always going to go back. It feels like we're in this golden age where it's like terminal Claude code. It's probably going to last a few more months, and then
Yeah.
it'll go back to some IDE, noob land or something like
If
that.
they can address, I guess, the heart, like the problems that people have with IDEs. I know a friend of mine really likes Cursor and he swears by Cursor. It's mostly front end. Maybe that's why. I don't know. But like another thing that I really like when you were saying about Cloud Code, terminal based view, Gemini CLI did a big upgrade on their terminal.
Yeah.
you can do Control S now to go into selection mode and select things and copy paste them. And the scroll experience, they say we fixed the flickering, like, you know, Cloud Code starts to disco. Gemini CLI has this new way of scrolling. I found it slow. My machine is not slow, but when I was scrolling, it was sometimes a bit laggy. But if it fixes some of the like scrolling prep problems, because if you're reading an LLM and it puts out a message and it scrolls all the way back down, and you have to go back to where you were to like, what was
Oh
it thinking?
yeah,
It's so annoying.
these little things are like so important, aren't they? Like that.
Well, Gemini is doing a good, like, I used it 2 weeks ago. It was horrible. I posted it. It was on
Yeah.
LinkedIn. I was like, that was a horrible
Well, we're
experience.
living in a golden age where like there's competition between Gemini and Claude. I don't know where I did use Codex the other day, but like I was flabbergasted because Codex doesn't have like support for project-based
Shell.
configuration and things like this. I'm like,
Oh, yeah,
what?
no, you, yeah. You,
And I'm
when you
like,
want
what
the
the
prompt
fuck? I
files,
mean,
you have
how
to do it in your
easy
home
is that a
directory.
feature to implement?
It's
Like,
so
guys.
horrible, yeah. And you don't have a shell also. Like, you can't exclamation mark. And I've tried to search how do I run terminal shell commands in inside Codex, and it's like you can't. Which
So
is
like
very annoying.
Codex is basically off the map at this point. I mean,
Yeah,
what
which is but then OpenAI says, okay, we give Codex ChatGPT 5.1 Codex Pro to everyone. Right after Gemini was announced, Gemini 3, they go like, hey, everyone access to this now.
But I mean, I don't really see the value in it. I mean, I'm a Claude 4.5 gang still. I don't get anything out of OpenAI because like that's the trouble. Like people, I think a couple of chats ago you were saying that you put on auto, but I'm now thinking like no, I need Claude 4.5 or this is not going to work.
Auto, like you let it like auto approve and you
Yeah,
just
well,
let it auto.
auto choose the models. Like I
Oh
want to
no,
choose the model.
yeah, I also change for Gemini CLI. Definitely, I don't want it to go into Flash, so I don't choose it to. I don't let it choose. I think that's mainly why I was having so many frustrations with Gemini CLI,
Yeah,
because it
you
was kept
gotta.
going into Flash.
So, I
Same with
mean, like,
Haiku.
would you like if you were ranking the models, would you say Claude is still top, or would you say Gemini is three is now eclipsed
It's
Claude?
very hard to say because my access to Gemini 3 has been quite limited. Like I said, I haven't tried it in preview mode on the paid subscription of Gemini CLI. I'm using it in
Okay.
anti-gravity free. So
I think
you
you can assume you got the tasty experience there.
yeah, I did some really cool stuff. But again, like I'm not doing benchmarks because I find this is the hardest thing for me to make an opinion about these things is. Okay, so basically what happened to
Yeah,
me this week was
but benchmarks are always like weird and manipulated. I think it is
some people
perfectly
run their
valid
own.
to go on feels, basically.
I don't think so because it's so hard to basically I saw some Reddit posts and people were like, I gave all three models the same prompt. This is how they fared. I think that's a valid thing, but I don't have time for that because like what happened to me was I promised to get something deployed by this by today, like 2 hours ago, supposed to finish it, and I started on Monday, and then I realized that I kind of underestimated it as usual, as all software engineers do all the time. maybe not all, just me then, I guess.
No,
But
I get it wrong.
yeah, so then what happened is I had to get things done and I was like watching my weekly budget on Anthropic carefully because I cannot run out of tokens when
It's
I wanted to
like
send it off.
a drug, isn't it? It's like, oh, I check my supply.
Yeah, I kind of choose what jobs I will do myself, and like I don't let the model do some stuff. But if I wanted to do like a heavy troubleshoot going across 100 files, I'd let the model do that, right? It's going to be a lot faster than me trying to do it. If I have to rename a couple of files and do things like that, I'm not going to say, yeah, go ahead and go do that and waste, you know, a million tokens renaming files or you know, reading a whole file and then outputting the same file into a new directory. That's ridiculous. Yeah. So anyway. I was kind of hitting close to the limits by Wednesday, and there was all this speculation about like Gemini coming out, these betting screenshots getting shared. It was pretty cool and funny to see all of that. But I was like betting on it that it come out, and then I have access to a free LLM on top of
Oh my
everything.
God, it's
And
like
so The moment it came out, I literally have like, oh, and I also have the Cloud Code web version. And I thought, what it, you know, I never tried it. I have $250 credits there. And I thought, given the API calls a day for me, easily around
Oh, so
$100.
you have a different credit set for the different.
Yeah, so with Anthropic subscription, you get your Cloud Code access, but then they give everyone that has a subscription, depending on their tier, a number of credits. So like if you're in a Pro Max 200, whatever, you got like $1,000 to try out their web interface. So you can go to cloud.ai slash code, and it's a web version of Cloud Code. So you don't have all of your CLIs, you don't have like your credentials, everything there. It just have access to your Git repo and it can do some tasks. And I was like, I want to try out a new interface, like a React library of components. And I was like, you don't need any tools for that. So I have $250 credits there. Given the amount of credits I spend a day, $100, I think in 3 days I will be able to spend $250.
Oh
Again,
my
I
God.
thought that this was going to be like API, because the API is charged very heavily, whereas you pay $20 a month, but it's telling me that I'm using over like $600 of API calls. That's how the tool tracks my calls and says this is how many you are actually spending if you were actually paying for every API call. So 250, I thought was going to be over in a minute, right? And it literally spent $8 only, and it
What,
finished
why is
the
that?
thing.
Why is it because the web one is more efficient?
I don't know. Maybe it's because it's. I don't, I have no idea why the web was so efficient,
So
but
are you on the max plan or the pro plan?
I'm on the pro. I'm paying $20 a month. I'm diversifying, right? I have put $20 in OpenAI,
Oh,
$20 in
yeah.
Gemini, and $20
And
in
just to reiterate what you were saying, so you're on like a weekly limit by the sounds of things for the
Yeah, pretty
club.
much every provider gives you a 5 hour session token budget and then a weekly token budget. Before, they only give you 5 hours session token budget, and then people were running it and sharing keys, and they were just maximizing it by having pools of keys. And so now they put like weekly budget, which
Wow.
basically equates to about 10 sessions that you 10 5 hour
So,
sessions.
besides tracking your tokens and your credits, have you been trying to make your prompts more terse? I mean, I think we agreed that MCP sucks. So,
Yeah.
have you dropped you don't use any MCP servers?
I just run a slash MCP on my Cloud Code and it says zero MCPs connected.
Okay.
Maybe it's
And
because it just updated,
then
but I'm like,
what other token optimizations have you been making?
okay, so I find these prompts are so difficult to get right unless you are running an eval suite that evaluates your use cases to make sure that the prompts still work with the model and all that. I don't want to write them myself. I don't want to maintain them myself. So I'm using SpecKit, and I've customized it a tiny bit. I removed anything that says you're going to write out everything into a different markdown file. I'm going to make sure that you use Beats, Steve Yeager's thing to do
Okay,
the issues, right?
SpeakKit and Steve Yeager's
SpecKit, and
beats.
yeah, and it's going all right. I've tested it out. I started recording. I say this every time we talk. Like I've got a recording, but it's like I'm still not happy with it. But yeah, it's going all right.
Oh, by the way, can you take the framing out? It auto frames your face all the time.
I don't know how to do that.
Are
It's
you
you
on
told me. Yeah, you
Mac
told me
or?
last time.
I think it's called center stage. You just click the green icon and you turn off center stage.
It's on Zoom.
I'm not too sure. I think it's a Mac feature actually.
But where do I disable it then? Because I'm on a Zoom call.
Yeah, well, in my Mac OS machine, I have this green icon when it's like showing the usage of the,
Ah,
and then you just click the green icon and
center
then
stage.
And you
Oh,
just
it
turn
was
it.
not on.
Oh.
Now it's off. Now it's on.
Okay, there's something.
Now
Maybe it's
it's
a.
off.
Okay, maybe go video settings. It's probably in video settings. In Zoom, then.
Yeah, it's Zoom, of course.
Zoomity doom doom.
Video settings.
Yeah, auto framing, new. Turn that off.
Video settings. Virtual background appearance.
It's an appearance.
Auto framing. Oh. Okay, it's off. Wait,
Yeah.
my video is off too now. Okay, it stops, right?
Hopefully.
Okay,
Yes.
but you were
Okay,
saying, do
so
you like how do you keep your prompts terse?
or your token usage down. 'Cause
I'm
like for
not good at
example, when
that.
I'm working with Claude, I need to give it quite a lot of context 'cause I'm working on a huge code base, to be honest. And like I'm never too sure if it's like looking through my Git logs. I know it kind of shows the thinking, but I'm like it doesn't like every stage when it does the thinking, it doesn't really give good feedback about how many tokens it's used or what it's actually consumed. So I'm always in this like gray zone of like, am I using my tokens efficiently or not? But
So
to be honest, I'm yeah.
there is this one person, Chip Huyen, I think she wrote a book about AI cookbook or something. She posted on LinkedIn a script that parses through your cloud logs, like your cloud code logs. Because so this is interesting. When you run cloud code, it stores all of your conversations on JSON files in somewhere, home directory or somewhere,
Oh my
right?
God.
Including every single screenshot. So if you take a screenshot and you paste it, that gets checksum. What's it called? Base64 encoded and written down
Into
into this
JSON or
JSON
something.
file.
Yeah.
So this, she said, no, not she. Some people said that there were like gigabytes of logs in there. But maybe if you're really curious about your token usage, you could try. And she posted a script that she did to parse it. And it basically, in her case, she wanted to look at how many times does a tool use or a command fail. For example, it tries to read the file and says, I can't find it. Oh, I'm in the wrong directory. I need to go up a directory and so on. Right. And she says, like, she analyzed how many times which commands failed. And then she updated her cloud.md to like specify, like,
Nice.
if
I mean
the, like, focus on this, focus on this. Yeah.
there's definitely like people who are starting AI consultancies right now, and I can't help but think that would be like a key tool, some key tooling in your AI consultancy. Like you know, if you're trying to upskill a team, you would want these logs, or you would want to run your tool over those logs to better train, to make people
Yeah.
better at using the AI.
So I think this is a very good observation that the fact that as an engineer, we must know how to use these tools. Using these tools is not easy. They change it so fast. And there's a lot of AI slop being generated as solutions around these tools,
Yeah,
like on Reddit.
the signal noise is pretty intense. Actually, come to think of it, which Reddit are you on? Because I posted like a genuine AI question on the VS Code Reddit, and everyone was replying to me like I was like they didn't even understand what I was saying.
The VS Code doesn't sound like somewhere you will get good. I'm usually on the Anthropic. On the
Reddit.
LLM devs, there's so many. I have no idea. Like sometimes, and but Reddit also suggests posts that do not belong to any subreddit that you're subscribed to. But because you visited one Reddit, it will suggest these posts because they're similar to what you normally look at.
Yeah.
So usually, if I see something nice, I subscribe to that subreddit, and it's like Claude Code, Claude Dev, LLM Dev. So I like a whole list over time.
So, but Reddit as a platform seems to be the best one for you still. You're not one of
Yeah.
these Discord disco bunnies,
Discourse is a
nitroing.
bit like Slack where you can have like a thousand Slacks connected and you don't
It's
remember, right? You
so
don't know
yeah, it's
even what
so
is good.
busy, so noisy.
Also, I
Yeah.
have like agents of AI, AI underscore agents,
So
AI agents, AI game dev, AI prompt programming.
you just hop between them and just try to. I mean,
It's on my front feet usually, slash artificial intelligence. I don't post.
the other person I like to follow is Simon Willison. Do you ever like check out his blogs? I mean, he blogs about AI like 3 times a day
You
almost.
shared it with me, didn't you? You
Yeah.
sent me a blog post of him.
Yeah, I like his work a lot. The thing that blew me away about the Gemini 3 release is that he always talks he has his like own unofficial or official test of drawing a pelican on a bicycle, and the Gemini 3 did actually a really good job compared to all the other ones.
There's also ChatGPT coding and ChatGPT Pro. Just I thought those, and yeah, and Cloud AI, Cloud Code,
So you're on like
and
20 Reddits. Oh my God, you're living, you're deep diving, man.
no, I'm only listing the AI related ones, not the other one, not the
Oh,
NSFW ones.
dude.
Cursed AI. Oh,
So
no, not that one, not cursed AI.
and what about all the, don't you have any other interests like kite surfing or whatever the
Yeah, I'm
thing?
not listing those.
I did you see that thing on Hacker News about Europe relaxing their GDPR rules around AI? And when I looked into the comments, most people sort of interpreted this as a victory for cookies. So we don't have cookie banners anymore in Europe.
It's funny, right? This whole cookie thing. But coming back to the Simon Willis test of asking you to draw a pelican on a bike, we were talking earlier about like benchmarks that people run, and I think that's a type of benchmark, right? That's interesting that other people evaluate a model against. There was something I forgot because. Yeah, usually I also just go off of like what other people say about like I've given it this test. Definitely if they are providing like receipts, right? If they're saying, here's the repo, here's the assignment, here's how they did, this is what I saw. And then also if it's not like over exaggerated and repeated, because then it's like clearly AI generated and it's so painful to read through because it just repeats itself and you're like, oh my God, can
Oh
you just
yeah,
get to the point?
that's actually a good telltale sign of AI. Sometimes it
Yeah.
repeats, doesn't it?
So that's funny because a lot of subreddits immediately ban a post if it has too many emojis because it's like classic AI to
Yeah.
generate emojis or em dashes and things like that. So yeah.
Yeah, like when I'm using Claude, I get it. I get it to give me the solution, and then I validate it's working, and then I feel like I have to go through this step or stage or phase where I'm basically say less code, suck less, make it more tight, because
Yeah, so
it's pretty verbose by default.
with the crunch that I'm under for delivering something right now, I have, and you were saying earlier, you have a really large code base, and you then went on to say that it's very hard to control how much token it's using and so on. But when we go back to the very large code base part, when you said one of the issues I have. I just give it like a really big, like 7-year-old Golang mono repo that I adopted, like forked and added my own features on top and usually hacked them in. So it's super messy code. And I'm always like a little bit, reluctant, or I always try to just find the different paths. I kind of know the code base where it needs to go and change things. And I was like, I don't know, I'm going to do this myself. But then I tried Anti-Gravity, Gemini 3. It's a really light 7-year-old code base. And it pretty. It was, I didn't have to give it anything. Like I didn't have an agent.md or anything like that. And I said, like, look, I'm adding a new CLI. So the root right now, main.go is at the root, but we need to move it, refactor it so that the CLIs are separate directories so we can mint or build the different binaries from it. And then we need to like have a shared interface between those two binaries because one will write files on this, the other one reads it. So where like I suggest we put it here, there. I went a bit back and forth with ChatGPT on the web actually while in the gym, which is pretty cool. You can just talk and then brainstorm. And then I took the prompt, gave it to the anti-gravity. And it did an amazing job. It did a really good job. And in terms of code, the test suite on that repo is quite extensive. I went in, I wrote my own tests in that one area. So
How
it's kind of like a golden
do
file
you
test.
write your tests, your in Go tests or what?
Yeah. It's funny because when I first started working with this repository, I was very surprised by their test approach. They have like this golden files approach, which is kind of very more popular now as snapshot testing in the Jest
Oh
ecosystem.
yeah, Hashimoto talked about that in
Yeah,
his late,
I think you shared me a post or it was on Reddit. Hashimoto did a call did a talk back in 2007 of how they wrote no 2000 17 of how they wrote Terraform and how they wrote their test suites, and he did different testing mechanisms.
Yeah.
And
He
then I saw he
did
talked
a
about
newer
it.
one when he
Yes, it
talks.
was linked in the same YouTube video, so I looked
Yeah.
at the new one as well. Very interesting. But that's how the tests were written. So they were all golden tests. There, it's a directory with all the possible, like, different scenarios of the config file, which is ugly YAML. I hate YAML, but anyway, it's a, like I said, 7-year-old thing. It uses a YAML file as an input file. So I just added a couple new fields in the config, and then I activated those fields in the test, in the test data. I ran the generate all the golden files. I reviewed it if it makes sense, and then I just let Gemini and the LLM do its thing, no matter like the code. I saw like there's a whole bunch of lines there, and it's like duplicated, and I committed everything, and I said like, hey, can we look at this and clean this up? And it says done, done. It's cleaned up. I ran the golden test, fail, error. I was like, okay, there's something wrong because you duplicate like all of these additional lines are here that shouldn't be there. And then the LLM says, oh yeah, my refactor did not take into account this edge case and that edge case. And I just went like, revert everything. I stick to the commit. I don't care. My tests are passing. I'm not going to bother too much again under crunch. I can understand that over time, it can result in horrible spaghetti code and hard to maintain problems. But it's kind
Speaking,
of like the balance, classic
yeah,
tech debt.
speaking of reverting a commit. I'm very nervous about letting AI make a commit.
No,
I don't
yeah,
know.
I didn't revert the commit. I unstaged, like, reverted all the changes,
Okay,
just checked
because
out
sometimes Claude,
last commit.
I feel, takes some liberties because, like, I don't want it to do git commits. I should put that in my,
Absolutely not. No,
I should put that in my Claude.md, but sometimes it does it. I'm like, dude, stop.
Well, so I am very reluctant to let the LLM do a commit. I usually stage the files, and then I prompt the LLM, and then I look at what it did against the stage files, and if I'm happy, I then stage additional files. So that's like I should be committing more aggressively myself, but I'm just staging files until I'm happy and I know that things work, and then I want to do the commit because I
So,
like my commits to work.
what is your workflow? Because, like, for me, it's like I'm using VS Code at work, to be honest. But if I'm at home, I'm using Claude Code, and then I have another terminal where I'm like checking the things that it does, and then in that terminal, I'm also doing git adds. But I'm just curious if you are some in turbo lazy git
No.
mode or something.
Yeah, so I have VS Code, and I use a shell, the terminal in VS Code, to run Cloud Code, which has an IDE integration. So that means Cloud Code will open files into VS Code to show the diff if I didn't allow it to make changes itself. Also, I don't know if it always captures it, but if you select something, then when you do a prompt, it will say, and you have also deselected.
Paste
So
the
it reads
text,
your, yeah. And then what I do is I stage files that I like know that I'm happy with the changes it made.
Well,
If I
just in
care
that
about the
UI on the
changes,
left, in the, you're just gonna
yeah, I
you just go
stage.
plus
But when
plus.
I do the commits, I always do lazy git because I used to use G. I used to like sign my commits, and for some reason, it doesn't. I don't have it now with my latest laptop, but I've got the habit now to always commit through the terminal, because
So
the
you
passphrase
stage in
wasn't
VS
working.
Code and then you jump into lazy git to commit.
Yeah.
It seems a
Which
bit
works.
unoutable, but
No,
I kind of like the VS Code commit because it does the automatic commit message summary.
my commit messages are kind of like just usually one headline of the feature or the chore or the fix, and then some comments. Usually I
Conventional
look at the
commit.
stage files that I look at, like I go through the files on the left while I'm looking at like, oh, we also added this, oh, we also added that. And then I just yeah, it's conventional commits and some message body. But that's
Okay,
my
so you
usual workflow. But
don't use
then when
AI.
you were saying earlier, we're afraid of letting it commit. But when you work with Cloud Code Web, and I just like told it, here's my repo, integrate this new React component library to replace my custom components that are kind of bad that you wrote, by the way. And then Cloud Code just created a branch, and of course it has the only way to get its work is by it committing. And it was committing all the time. And it was
Wasn't
pretty
okay.
cool. I just pulled the changes to my local and then made some changes, pushed it, and
I guess that's like that's like the thing I want to control. I can get yes or no. I can get yes or no. Oh my
so with
God.
the With the PR workflow that I'm setting up, the release workflow now, I'm doing release place with Go Releaser, and I want the PRs to be merged, squash merged. So no matter how many commits it did on the branch, it will all become one commit when the PR is merged. And that works well with like release place to find what has changed, and then it creates a release PR, keeping track of every PR merge that happened.
Yeah, I mean,
So it's
when I'm develop, I mean, I was developing like a Terraform workflow yesterday. Oh, I kind of wish that I could have got AI to do it, but it was one of those things where this workflow was part of all these other workflows and all these other secrets, so you could only trigger it through GitHub workflow. So I was going really, really, really slowly because I was like, git commit, dash a dash m fix, and git push, and then triggering a workflow. One good thing is that I got AI to be able to read the workflow error log,
I do
and then
see.
it can help me iterate on that thing. But it's still. It was slow to iterate, and it was
CI/CD is always slow. That's why you need project like Earthly, or what's it called, Dagger from the Docker Solomon.
I've been dipping into Dagger, but I never got much out of it. I mean, have you got any joy out
What
of these?
did I say? Docker Solomon? I meant Solomon Hayek from Docker. I haven't.
Solomon.
So the I
That's an
really
epic
like the
name.
idea behind Dagger, because Solomon says we failed. If Docker is just a runtime for containers, Docker failed, because the idea was to improve the ecosystem, dev ecosystem, right? Mac is basically a transparent way of getting things to work on your machine, and their focus was always dev tooling,
Not
right?
super transparent, to be honest, but yeah, okay.
That was their idea, right? The whole idea of dot cloud, when they released Docker, their internal container stuff was dev tooling, and they really optimized the dev workflow, of building and having it run across different machines, right? Build chip run was always their motto, right? And so with Dagger, he says, I'm focused on the dev workflow. Like CI/CD is horrible experience. We want to be the ability to reproducibly have our CI/CD pipeline. And at the same time, there was Earthly.dev, and there was another one as well. They were trying to do the same thing.
But I mean, they must have failed because I don't know anyone who's doing this stuff locally. Everyone, GitHub workflows have won the day, and I mean, like, I
So
have this
it
really,
is a horrible experience. But I had the same with AI though. It's really nice. I used the GitHub CLI. Did you, is that how you integrated it with Cloud Code?
I have this like MCP snippet where I just expose the actions tool set because the MCP
It's too big.
is too big from GitHub.
So this is where I do few shop samples, right? I basically push my commit to the PR, the workflows run, and I go into a Cloud Code, I run the shell, I say GitHub dash or GitHub PR check number three. And then it shows these are all the checks that run and these succeeded. This is how much it took. This is a job description or the link to the job ID. And then you just go GitHub CLI PR, or is it run view? And then you can do either run ID or with the argument flag dash dash job, and you just pass that job from that PR check in there. And when I first show to Cloud Code, I do these comments myself, so it sees the output, and you can do dash dash log failed and whatever. Then it started using JQ to like JSON outputs to parse through things, but it was I don't know, it did things that I thought wasn't really necessary. But I don't need an MCP, I don't need anything. I'm just showing it the GitHub CLI command. And then it just goes in a loop. It's just like, oh, I see it's failing here. Oh, I see this
Yeah,
problem.
so I'm in that team showing the GitHub what to do, but like
Not repeatedly, not every time, all the
My colleague asked a good question in the sense it's like he asked like, what do I need to use the GitHub CLI. What should I use, the GitHub MCP or some other approach? And then basically I chimed in and said like, well, the GitHub MCP sucks because it's too verbose and it wastes your tokens. But if you use the GitHub API or CLI, sorry. If you use the GH CLI, you have to tell it how what to use. So my colleague is a bit of a noob. I think, to be honest, he was a little bit confused by what I was saying. Like, you have to teach GH CLI. You have to teach the better way is to teaching the AI how to use the command. I mean, that kind of blew his
And
brain. I
that's
should
what
have.
cloud skills are for, right?
Okay, then I need a skill to use the GitHub CLI. Oh, that's a
That's
good
exactly
weekend
one.
project. That's a good weekend project.
For sure, there's one. For sure,
Yeah.
there's one.
Okay.
There's actually people that are writing LLM like agents to create skills, and you give it a couple of prompts of what it does, and then it will explore the CLI, and then it will write like an agent skill, which I think is a bit dumb, right? But like, if it works, it works. The whole idea of the cloud skills is progressive disclosure. So you start with like the first basic flows, and then if you need more, do this. If you need more, do that. And then cloud is supposed to like parse through it and progressively read more to like be able to do more. And yes, that should be the way that you don't always have to show how to use a GH CLI every time, but
Yeah,
you just
you're right.
should be
You're
able to
right. I
point it
should
to a
have thought
skill.
about that because I think my colleague just was thinking I was an idiot or something like that. Like, yeah. Okay, I need to. I need. Have you created any skills?
No, I've only like played with the beats skill, right? But I don't like I integrated it, so it's living somewhere in my, I think it's in your
Yeah,
home directory.
the problem is in my world, like I have my personal Claude code space, which is fun. But day to day in my workplace, I'm using VS Code, and VS Code doesn't support skills, I believe.
They have something. In Inspect-Kit, they have like they have a different way now to expose different agents, sub-agents into your VS Code as well. When I look at the Speckit latest presentation from the guy who is like one of the main advocates on YouTube,
Yeah.
he showed how they have like integrated Speckit into VS Code settings, like copilot.copilot/settings.json or something, and they have like declared all of the agents that the Speckit provides. So then when you are in the chat window of VS Code, you can switch between these agents. And
Okay,
one of them is
need
like the
to
Speckit plan
get better
agent.
at VS Code or something like that.
Look at the Speckit YouTube video channel, and then one of the latest videos he shows how they are exporting the LLM Speckit agents into VS Code. So I think if you can do that, you have dedicated agents, maybe there's a way to like have the agent skills as well. Because again, like they are constantly feeding off each other, right? One company brings something out, another one copies it.
Oh, sorry, I'm getting distracted. My wife is messaging me about the school run. What time do you have to go back to work? In 20 minutes or something?
Yeah, something like that. You said earlier something about when your colleague asked and teaching it how to use. I think that's where. If you are a terminal, like somebody who likes to live in a terminal, tools like Cloud Code kind of feel very cool because you already are used to create pull requests using GH, right? You already go GH PR create dash dash fill whatever. You push your branches from with Git, so you're not someone that goes to the web and then clicks on a button to create branch
Yeah.
and so on, right?
There's
So
definitely
that's where. I think that transfers easily into these
like
LLM
what
workflows.
going back right back to what Steve Yeager's talk was about was that like he was saying that the statistics in companies where people are adopting AI and they are by all measures becoming more productive. And then there's the senior staff engineers who go who are they're people in a company who are not adopting it. So what do you do with those people who are not adopting it? And to be honest, I see that in my workplace. It's like I'm using AI like you are, I suppose, and I see the benefit, but there's some there's definitely members of my team who are just completely not interested in picking up these new workflows. And I'm like,
So I went to a Q&A conference back in June, and I was invited on the panel, and one of the audience questions was exactly this, like as a team lead, because QA and LLMs, it's quite a big changing there, right? Automation of LLM generating test cases and all. sorry, automation of tests and generating test cases and test data. So one of the people there was like, how can I help or ensure that everyone within the team picks up on these LLMs? And the reply from the panel members and somebody worked at Singapore Airlines, and he says we create a prompt database, we do regular brown bags, we
Oh,
share
yeah.
people with different workflows on how it helps. But at the same time, when you're saying like there's this senior engineer who's really reluctant to pick it up, I think maybe you need someone of those in your company, right? Maybe you need someone. And that makes me think of a Reddit post I saw on the DevOps subreddit, I think this week, which was like, I'm so frustrated. Everyone in my team is using LLMs, and I'm like the only one that's actually doing manual reviews of all these PRs, and I'm reading all these
Yeah, that's
PRs, and
true.
I'm like I feel like I'm the only one like commenting on these lines of code and saying like, why is this like that, and so on.
But still, I mean, maybe, yeah, I see your point. There's definitely like an argument to be made. Okay, here's another problem that I hit at work, right? Is that strictly speaking, we have a co-pilot license, and I think there's basically the
Some
ChatGPT
contract.
models exposed there. But I want to use Claude. So VS Code gives me an ability and to paste in an API key for Claude as well as Google Gemini and all the other stuff. But then you have this conundrum like, the company hasn't expressly approved this
Yeah,
model and that
contract.
model. Can I use it?
So this is very
And
tricky,
then
right?
furthermore, there's a whole topic around who's going to pay for this. I feel like these are unresolved issues, but maybe let's get back to it. I think I need to do the school run. It's icy out here, and my wife doesn't want to drive in that in the
I need to take the kids to school.
yeah.
Okay, yeah. Just on that point, right? For me currently, I'm using this is, I think, if you're in infrastructure and DevOps, I've always said these are, to me, are the most interesting fields to be in, because it's the same everywhere. It's not secret sauce. It's not the
What do you mean,
secret
the
of the
same
company.
Terraform everywhere? What do you
Yeah,
mean?
I mean the ideas of running infrastructure on the cloud and setting up observability dashboards and monitors and CI/CD pipelines, it's not a core differentiator or secret sauce of an organization. It's not like something that's
Oh, I see what you're
proprietary.
saying. Yeah, right. The skills are
Right.
transferable.
Exactly. So I used to coach or work with product engineers and then try to convince them like, why do you bother with working purely on business business f feature tickets, user stories, and so on? I mean, isn't it way more interesting to be in the DevOps space and then be like exposed to something that's much more transferable between organizations when you want to change as well? But that was done until I got into a position where DevOps was really seen as a cost center, and then you are like completely blocked to do any type of refactoring, because why would you want to do this?
This
It's tech.
sounds like my life right now, to be honest.
And I was always super happy to be DevOps. But then you have the neg negatives, which are like, unthankful, because nobody cares. Everything's running. People are wondering, what is this guy doing? Until there's an outage, and then everyone's, breathing down your neck, and why is it down? And then I had a few companies where there was like a celebrity, but that was a pretty dire state, right? Because the whole website was down, and you managed to recover it within X amount of time, and then
Yeah,
you're
like
like, oh, thank you so much.
this hero thing, like, yeah, you saved the day, dude. You got the website back up. Maybe it shouldn't have been down in the first place, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, and it depends also if you're the fire starter, right? If you're the ones putting out fires all the time, but you're actually the fire starter. But that
It's
was
a
related
strange
to.
industry, isn't it?
So that's where I think using LLMs for DevOps related tasks is easier, because it's like, it's not so proprietary. And a lot of the things I do, I actually take an open source library, and I work on adding features there. So I'm saying to everyone like, hey, don't I this rule doesn't apply to me, because I'm taking an Apache 2 library, I'm putting it as an open source
Yeah.
fork, and all of my cloud code generated code is not related to any company data.
But do you think, like, for example, do you think Google trains their Gemini model on their own proprietary code base.
I think there would be afraid that there would be exfiltration of data, right? That I think there's clear cases
So,
of like
basically, like you, so if you went to Gemini, say, create me a Google search engine, they would it just wouldn't do
I'm pretty sure that
it.
there's a whole like actors trying to exfiltrate as much. I mean, they always say that the Qwen, when it was like trained and like how many percent of the total cost that OpenAI and other companies spent, Qwen AI from China was developed with like a fraction of the cost. And they say it's trained on synthetic data. It's trained, exfiltrated from all of the OpenAI models and so on, right? So there's definitely organizations trying to exfiltrate any type of proprietary information from companies, and I think Google must separate the training
Yeah,
data
but
for
like, but
Gemini
I don't
very
think other
carefully.
companies have that luxury. I think the, I mean, okay. Obviously, people are trying to keep their own proprietary source code safe, and obviously, their private GitHub repos are not being indexed by a
Microsoft.
model. But nonetheless, you know, if, I'm sure if you ask a CTO of a company with a big code base, and they and you ask them and you said to them like, would you like a model that knows about your coding style and your and your existing code, they would jump at it, right?
Yeah, there's companies
So
doing that, right?
there's a bit of a chasm there. Like, how do you bridge that?
So SourceGraph has a lot of interesting YouTube videos, because SourceGraph positioned themselves as the originally enterprise solution for code like search, right? So they have big
Right.
contracts with enterprises for proprietary self-hosted deployments to index the code, and for JP Morgan, whatever huge clients, to for their software engineers to quickly find code or relevant microservices for certain functionality across all of the code base, right? So then they are also having their LLM on top of this now, like Annie, I think it's called, or I
Okay,
forgot
so there are products for this, okay.
and a lot of well, when
I
earlier
mean,
you were
GitHub needs to do this next. Seriously, I mean, like,
So when we talked about I'm using VS Code, and then I'm not sure which model I have access to, I can give it an API key, and what's the contract like? When I talked to someone from GitHub, he was visiting in Vietnam. He told me that they have very strict contracts in place with enterprises and how they are using the code. And also, when you sign with Microsoft and on the GitHub Enterprise, you decide like. For example, one of the risks that companies have is that they get a lawsuit for copying code, right? If they use an
yeah.
AI, how can GitHub Copilot deployed across all of these people that are using the AI guarantee that I'm not generating code that is proprietary or that is copyrighted and that's now in my code base? Like, imagine it's GPL and now I have to open source everything. So that's a risk. So Microsoft has these contracts in place that says,
Yeah.
first off,
But
It sources different, it
but it's
generates
so
different
easy to mess up.
solutions.
Like, what stops one of my
Hold
team
on, you haven't
members?
listened how they solved it yet. So he told me that they are generating different code solutions, and then they do a cross check to any like existing and licensed code in their database, and then they're rejecting anything that could be, and then they're sending you only the one that is passing all of that. Sometimes Copilot gives you code, and then suddenly gets removed. It says like, this is copyrighted code, I can't give you that. And then the
That's
second thing is what he told me is that
interesting.
Microsoft actually will sponsor you in if there's a lawsuit. If you prove that this code is generated by Copilot, and Microsoft will be part of the lawsuit. That's what he told me. Like, part of the contract stipulates that if your company gets what's it called? Gets a
Exfiltrated or
lawsuit. Yeah, no, gets a lawsuit against you, like
yeah.
then Microsoft
Oh, okay, because you're
legal will help
using
you.
source code that might be interpreted as being proprietary.
Yeah. So basically, you said it's very hard, but he was saying that's one of the things Microsoft has to convince enterprise
Yeah.
users that they are
It
protecting
seems
them
like
against.
a good tack, but I mean, at the end of the
Yeah, he was
day,
sales.
that's Microsoft, that's GitHub. They know about your proprietary code, but how about this scenario? Like, there's a new edit, there's a new IDE, let's call it anti-gravity, and someone like, Oh wow, this can help me do my job. And then he just launches it on his proprietary code base, and then all of a sudden.
So that's where it's important for organizations to put in place AI policies and books, what's it called, run books or guides, because
Yeah.
if this happens, right, it means that the user hasn't really been informed, or he's like maliciously doing it. He knows that it's not allowed, but he's going to do it, or he's not, no, he doesn't know about the risk and he just installs it, but then he hasn't been trained, right? So in my organization, we had to sign a contract that says that I will not copy proprietary. And this is, we had to first learn what is proprietary and confidential information. We were like, no before trainings, and then also sign a contract saying, like, you know, if they find out that I do this, but I'm not doing it, then I will be in
Like one
trouble.
thing in some workplaces that I like to do is to encourage the use of code spaces. Do you know GitHub code
Yeah, I haven't
spaces?
used it, but yeah.
But the cool thing about that is that like the code is there and it's not on your local machine and there's a nice clear division. Yeah, I'm just finding it hard, like because like yeah, like we like I we have a special API key with a particular vendor. I'm not going to say who, which gives us private confidentiality with the code that we use on it. But then it's not clear if we have permission from the client if we can use snippets of the code. Like to be honest, I'm not even using the code base, right? It's like what you were saying with the Terraform. It's like I mean not Terraform, like infrastructure's code. It's like maybe I'm trying to debug a GitHub workflow that's no different to anyone else's Terraform plan and apply. And I would want to use that paid for model and then I'm always a little bit like, I'm not sure I can do this because technically what I've just copied and pasted here is proprietary code, but it isn't really. And yeah, all this ambiguity makes the whole experience a little bit crappy.
Right. But I was going to say that you are somebody that then worries about that, either because you've been trained or informed about these risks. So, you know, that's because your company has put in place policies so that you are knowledgeable about these things, right? If
Yeah,
you look at many other
but the
people, they may
policies are
not.
not clear. They just create FUD, you know what I mean? Like, and FUD is worse than,
Fear, uncertainty, and doubt, which is a crypto term.
yeah,
Popular crypto.
I mean, how many companies have really clear policies with AI? Like, you can only use this model, and that's it.
So
I don't think I've seen any. I don't think I've seen any.
I think that's where your organization is providing you with access to AI, and my organization is giving us access to GitHub Copilot. I am naming it. That also at the enterprise level, the organization level, they control which models the users have access to. In our case, we can only select the ones that they have approved in our organization.
Okay,
So I don't.
in VS Code,
Yeah.
basically, right?
And I only know this because I don't manage this, but I know this because somebody in the chat asked, like, hey, they just released Sony 4.5. We can only access 4. Can you give us access to this new model? And then somebody has
Yeah,
to go into it and then
but
enable the access to it.
you say that, and I think what you're saying is true. But at the same time, VS Code gives me the option just to paste in an API key. So like.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not using the VS Code one, and again, I'm excusing my not using it by only working on repositories that are not private. And basically, if I do something, yeah. Anyway, so I don't know if I can add the key. But earlier, you also say if you use VS Code in the first place, right? The guy who was working at Microsoft was telling me that the plugin system at the time, which is more than a year ago, had no control about, like, VS Code did not have any constraints on what a product plugin could read. So a plugin could just read anything from your folder, right? And I think they have improved that now, because now whenever you install an extension, it tells you, like, watch out, do you trust these people? And that's all they did, basically, like a
Oh
plugin
yeah.
system.
I mean, yeah,
So
VS
the
Code
LLM,
extensions. Yeah,
yeah.
like Yeah, I mean
They can read
that's a
everything.
good segue because people go like, "Oh, did you get approval to use this model thing like that?" Like it's there. I mean, I didn't if they wanted to prohibit it, that yeah, but you should get approval before you use anything. It's like, how many extensions do you have installed? You're like, how many tools do you have installed? Did you get permission for every one of those extensions or tools that you have installed? I mean, you're being ridiculous. So
And that's one of the things the Microsoft guy told me as well. This is something that they, as the Copilot extension implementation provider, he said it was actually GitHub acquired by Microsoft, right? He said that they guarantee that it will only read files that you have open in the editor. It will not read anything from the disk. So that's the type of guarantees that you like. I don't know that until he told me, right? It's probably somewhere in the fine print. I don't know about the MD Gravity right now. From Google, I just installed it. I gave it the code base, which is open source, to work on, and it probably read everything anyway. And it must be able to, because if it can't, it wouldn't have been able to do such a good job to find exactly where it needed to change what, right?
yeah. Well, okay. I wanted to end the conversation on something a little bit more positive, but I guess the positive thing is that we're living in a really exciting time, really. I'm really digging the fact that I'm alive. I mean, it's
Yeah.
amazing. I mean, like the future's is bonkers, isn't it? It's incredible. It's a
So I agree absolutely with what you just said, but the second part about the future is where I'm like, for how long? For how long can
I
I use
I do
all of this stuff for
feel
$20 a
I'm
month?
probably like in
And yeah, I
that
know you're
sort of
trying to be
like
positive.
I'm in that maybe the plateau camp. Like I do feel like we are hitting a surge because some people say like, oh, this thing is just going to go like this, like forever, and I'm like, I think the models are improving, but not as fast as you would think because the models, I feel, have a limited training supply, right? They're not going to invent new information. That it's going to plateau essentially by how much good stuff there is for it to be trained on, right?
If it's like software, where it's just an ever-expanding gas, it takes up whatever resources are available. I think with AI right now, it's taking up every resource it can in terms of electricity and power and GPU capacity. It's very hard to predict because before the release of Gemini 3 this week, everyone was like, what happened to Google Gemini 2.5 Pro, me included, in March was great. Now, this really have to like be really good. Is it delay because is there a disarray? There were so many articles about, because I searched Gemini 3.0 release pretty much every day to find out if there was any news. And
Yeah,
every
you're an
article was
addict. You're
like,
like, when is the next
yeah,
thing
because I
coming?
had to get things done by Wednesday. And I was like hoping Gemini 3.0
And
releases, I get some free
your
credits.
Claude tokens or your
Yeah.
Claude budget was
So
almost expired.
every article I read before Wednesday was like the truth and the disarray within Google. Google is completely unable to handle it. Google has lost it. What is about these TPUs? Does the TPU supposed to be rolled out and give them the edge across the world, but the infrastructure is delayed? That's why Gemini 3 is delayed and blah, blah, blah. But then Gemini came out and everyone's like, Google did it. Google is the market leader. Look at how Google Gemini 3.0 is like this high in the benchmarks. Does that give like what they called it again? Because you have a much small, smarter model within your organization and you have full access to it, that means that you have the ability to accelerate much faster than the other companies, right? So with the announcement of Gemini 3 and in how good it is compared to GPT 5.1 and suddenly 4.5, that gives them not just like a small edge, that gives them a massive edge because it means internally they can have like hundreds of Gemini 3s running and improving on the products.
I mean, like, I definitely felt that maybe as long as a year ago, that all of a sudden, like Google Sheets and Google Docs basically got a whole bunch of new features. And like previous 5 years, Google Docs and the Google Suite felt frankly unmaintained. And I was thinking to myself, like, why all of a sudden is there so many cool new features?
After they lay off 30,000 people or something, why suddenly Google Sheets have all these new features?
Well, okay, there could be other mitigating factors, But I did basically occur to me that like maybe they have some technology that we don't have or something. Or do you think it's the fact that they laid off people?
No. I was just correlating with the fact that they laid off people
Yeah, about a
and
year
so
ago,
it must
yeah.
be LLMs or something, right? How can you suddenly
Oh,
have a whole bunch of new
that's a whole
features
kettle of
after you
fish.
lay off all these people?
Yeah,
Yeah,
let's get back to that. I think I've got to wind this
you
up.
gotta go.
Anyway,
Me too.
it was a great chat. I'll upload it. I'll share the link and ask everyone to please like and subscribe and share the podcast.
It's not
As
all gloom and doom.
and comment below, like if we said something stupid or something better, if we could have said something better, or then let us know. That I mean,
First
that's the
comment will be
point.
Google did not lay off 30,000 people. It's more like 100,000 people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, hopefully we get intelligent comments. But to be honest, the comments section is always not as good as I hoped it to be. All right.
So you're instigating right now. I
Well,
wouldn't
I
take
speak
it.
the truth only.
I wouldn't take it.
Okay, see you,
All right.
Vincent. Bye.